Welcome back to Workday Playdate, the podcast where leadership meets laughter and confidence gets a splash of curiosity and courage. I am your host, Erin Deal, keynote speaker, recovering perfectionist. And guess what? The only pilot I know is the autopilot on a Keurig machine. So this month's theme, my peeps, is effective communication. Because here's the thing, you can have the perfect plan, a color-coded Google calendar, and a vision board filled with good vibes, but if you don't know how to communicate under pressure, none of that matters. Today's guest has flown at 500 plus miles per hour, just inches from other jets, and lived to communicate the story. So buckle up, my peeps, this one's got altitude. So let's be real for a minute. A lot of us freeze up when the stakes are high. Maybe it's delivering feedback. Maybe it's speaking up in a meeting. Maybe it's just saying, no, that's not going to work for me. We hesitate, we panic, we people please, or we say something and instantly regret it. Enter Michelle Mace Curran. Now, Mace is a combat veteran, a former fighter pilot, and one of only two women in history to fly as the lead solo for the Thunderbirds. And that is the U.S. Air Force's elite aerial demonstration team. Now, she's been on the Kelly Clarkson show. She's featured in Glamour. And now she's on a mission to help you turn fear into fuel. Now, her book, The Flip Side, teaches us how to invert our perspective and build confidence in small, consistent ways, whether you're in the boardroom or buckling into a cockpit. So let me talk to you, my peeps. Have you ever held back an idea because you weren't sure it was good enough? Have you ever replayed a conversation 30 times in your head? Speaking for a friend, I did that this morning. Have you ever felt like everyone else had it together while you were faking it? We see you. Because here's the truth. A recent survey by Gallup found that 70% of employees say they lack confidence communicating under pressure. Harvard Business Review reports that fear of judgment is one of the top three reasons people stay silent at work. And women especially are conditioned to minimize, apologize, and over-explain. But Mace, she's here to flip that all upside down. Let's get into today's Playdate with Mace Curran. Okay, peeps, y'all aren't even ready. Welcome to the show, Michelle Mace Curran. Welcome to Workday Playdate.
Hey, thanks for having me. That was the highest energy podcast intro I've had so far, I think.
Okay, I'm going to take that. I told you, I'm like bringing fun back to the show for me. So something, maybe that was like a little hype for both of us. Like I was like, oh, let's go, Mace, let's go. So no, I'm truly pumped.
It was perfect because if you do that too committed, you will like blow out your microphone, right? And everyone right. That's listening on headphones is like, oh no. But that was, You threaded that needle well.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I will say I can't listen to my own self on this show because you know, but I'm okay. Enough about me. Let's get to you because this is the dopest conversation. So let's just start by setting an intention for the show. The theme this month is effective communication. It could be about communication. It could be about anything that you want to get or receive or even like release in this conversation. What's a one-word intention? Or it could be like a hyphenated word that you want to get.
I'll say connection.
Yes.
Because that effective communication is what will allow me to connect with your audience. And I mean, that is... You know you did a good job as a speaker or being on an interview when you connect. Like that is the primary goal.
That is it. Okay. And I know we're going to do it because I have like so many thoughts and questions just written down in my own brain that I want to ask you because we get a lot of pitches for this show now. And when we saw yours, we were like, this is going to be the coolest conversation. You literally have a badass life. So let's talk about this. This is a silly question. Fighter jets or podcast mics, which one is scarier and why?
Oh, that has evolved over time. I would say when I was an experienced fighter pilot, but new to speaking and being in the public figure type role, a podcast mic was somehow scarier.
I get that. I get that on a real level. Okay. But you, how long were you in a fighter jet? Like how many total years would you say?
Yeah. So I did 13 years on active duty in the Air Force. About the first two of those years, I was in pilot training. So I was, you know, brand new pilot, like 24, 25 years old, learning to fly in a little bit easier to manage aircraft.
Yeah.
But then as soon as I got through that, I was in the F-16, a fighter jet, for the next 11, 12 years.
So wild. Okay. So many stories. And you've lived a true life. So what do you feel like is happening for you now? And when you think about, when we talk about like the podcast mic versus the fighter jet, and you talk about just that fear coming on to being a public figure and like speaking and coming in, what does fear look like for you right now? And then how do you lean into it?
I think right now I am in the best place with fear that I have ever been in my life.
Yeah.
I think I have the most perspective on it and kind of the ability to recognize it for what it is, zoom out a little bit and be like, okay, this is a normal thing we're going to experience when we're doing something new or something challenging. And it's not a signal that we shouldn't be doing it or that we need to stop and run away. You know, it's kind of like our primal brain trying to keep us safe.
Yep.
But the bushes are not full of lions and tigers at this point. Yep. Right? So our fear is like saying something dumb on a podcast. And I remind myself that if I have the opportunity to do that, that means I'm in the game, right?
Oh, yes, Mace. Yes.
Like if I'm sitting on the sideline and playing it safe, I'm not going to have chances to fail.
That's right.
And what's the point then? Like, what are we all doing here if we're just like in our bubble where we know we have more potential than we're living up to?
Freak yeah. Okay. Like we used to call this show, we've had various iterations of it. It was called the Failed It Podcast. We always said fail yeah. And when I think about what you just said, it made me think of fail yeah. And then also a couple of things come to mind. Like you are in the arena. And you are literally in a different arena than, you know, you're in a different, let's call it a different sky, if you will, than you were for 13 years of your life in this fighter pilot life. And now you're doing the speaking, you have a book coming out, you're putting yourself in the arena. And I have to tell you something that somebody said to me recently, because it was, I know you have a book out. And when I was launching my own book, I got some feedback from somebody that sort of rubbed me the wrong way. And I spoke to a friend of mine who is also an author. And she goes, Erin, is that person in the arena? Is that person in the arena? Are they writing a book and talking about very vulnerable things and putting their life out there? And I was like, absolutely not. She goes, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I have sat with that for a long time. So you made me that when you said you were in the arena, those thoughts came up. And I think what you're doing now is so inspirational. What inspired you to write your book? What brought you to this place?
Yeah, this is not where I would have expected to be had you talked to me 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So I have been out of the Air Force and out of the jet for about 3 years at this point. And I've been working on my book that recently came out for that long as well. But kind of that thing that made me transition from flying fighter jets, which was my dream for so long, and which to an outsider seems like the dream job. And I walked away from it by choice to go be an entrepreneur, start my own business, be a speaker, be an author. It was that as my time on the Thunderbirds, which I don't even know if we talked about yet, I flew for the Thunderbirds, which is the Air Force's demonstration team. So we do all the air shows. I did that for 3 years. The flying in that environment is very challenging. But by, you know, year three, you've done that same demonstration 1,000 times. And it never becomes mundane, but it does become kind of routine. You have to be careful because you can get complacent. But it loses that initial excitement that it has when you're first learning to do it. But what really continued to fulfill me in that role were the interactions I got to have with other people where I could see the inspiration happen, especially with young girls and young women, you know, the light bulb moment for a 6 or 7 year old when they would meet someone that looked like them after an air show and they would connect the dots where they're like, I just saw those jets that I thought were so cool fly. And now this lady standing in front of me, who I can identify with, I realized that she was in one of them.
So cool.
Like, holy crap, the world is my oyster. And yes, you would see that look on their faces. And I realized that if I stayed in the Air Force, I wasn't going to get to do that in the same capacity with the same kind of authenticity that I could if I went out on my own. And that was the spark to transition to what I'm doing now, and also to write the book, because there was so much more I had to say than what you could do in a 45-minute keynote or a social media post. And there were so many stories that I think a lot of people could learn from. And I just needed a longer form to get those out there.
Oh, I love it so much. And I'm so glad you did. And kudos to you for recognizing. I mean, here's this. This makes me think I went skydiving one time, one and only time.
I've only gone once too. So don't be yourself.
Okay. But I literally thought to myself, okay, they just dropped us. We just flew. We jumped out of a plane in a parachute with my husband and I were both, we did the tandem skydiving. And when we got to the ground, they pulled the parachute back up, put it in their backpacks and went back up into the, and took another, you know, set of people out. And I was like, that's just a day at the office. And for you, flying with the Thunderbirds was just a day at the office. And so I could see where you've done that same thing over and over. It's still really cool and really magical. But those moments where you meet young women who are excited to do what you do and you see how you can connect with them and do it in this way, I think is so dope. So let's talk about the book, The Flip Side. Why did you title it that? And how can we start flipping our fear in everyday moments? Let's talk about it.
Yeah. So I think the subtitle kind of sheds some light on it, right? So it's The Flip Side, how to invert your perspective and turn fear into your superpower. And my second and third year with the Thunderbirds, I was the lead solo, number 5, which means I spent a lot of time flying upside down in front of the audience, a lot of time inverted. And it's kind of like what that position is known for. I had, you know, my long hair braided out the back of my helmet. So I would run a GoPro in my cockpit and I had all these videos of like my braid hanging out the back. And social media loved that, of course. And that became, you know, a way to connect with people. And so someone started calling it the Power Pony. I did not name it that myself, but so there was like all this stuff around that. And, you know, Top Gun being the pop culture reference that it is, there's the scene where he's like, because I was inverted. And that's become just so well known. You can see it on t-shirts. People in other countries know what the reference is. And so I think there's this thing about, you know, literally that was a little, you know, a fun tie back to my background. But I think there's this thing about flipping your perspective and just that perspective is everything. Like, we can have the exact same set of facts and the exact same situation playing out around us, but how we perceive it and how we respond to it and our attitude around it is what creates our experience.
Yeah.
And that's true totally. With fear. That's true with self-doubt. That's true with anxiety and apprehension and all those things. And I don't want to make it seem like it's super easy to just like take a step back and be like, oh, that's not actually as serious as I felt like it was, because that's hard. It takes practice.
Mm-hmm.
But in the book, you know, each chapter has a story. A lot of them are high stakes. It's like a near head-on collision with a fellow Thunderbird jet, hitting a vulture with a 6-foot wingspan and putting 2 holes in my airplane.
Oh my God.
A failed combat mission. Like we basically mined my background for high stakes.
Yeah.
Things that had happened. And so I think it's a unique lens on that, because people will be turning the page just like, I can't believe, like, this is insane. But it's not just a book full of cool fighter pilot stories, because the bulk of each chapter is like, okay, how was I able to navigate that moment? Or even if I didn't navigate it well at the time, what did I learn from it afterwards? Or what did someone around me do to help me navigate it? Like, what were mental tools that I learned, like what were tools to control my emotions in those high stress moments? And
okay,
how
can
anyone use it? Yes.
Okay. I got to ask you that. I got to ask you that question right there. What is like your number one mental tip that you use in such a high stakes situation? Like, you're inverted. you have this, what was it? A hawk?
A vulture.
A vulture. Yeah. A vulture. Like, or, you know, something's coming at you. You're flying inverted. You're upside down. What mindset tips do you use, or what's your favorite one that you wrote about?
So in those split second moments, like you describe, I think so much of it, to give the Air Force the credit it's due, I think so much of it comes down to training, just being drilled into your head again and again and again, and like just reflexes. But it's after that initial thing. So when I hit the vulture, I'm right side up for that, luckily. But there is no opportunity for me to move my aircraft. I'm traveling at, like, as far as miles per hour, like 450 miles an hour. It is just a flash, a thud. I feel it. I hear it. I see the streak of black right before it hits me. There is no time for me to respond to that. But now it's happened. Now we get into how to control that situation, not make it worse.
Yeah.
And make the best decisions with the limited information that I have. And that's the part that I think other people can learn from. Because it's most of us in our day-to-day lives, when something goes wrong, it is not a split second reaction, right? And there's nothing I can teach you to make you do the right thing when a car cuts you off in traffic to avoid hitting it, right? Like, that's just instinct. But what I can help with is, okay, the car cuts you off, you slam on your brakes, you don't hit it, now you're pissed. How do we control that part of it? Like, how do we respond to that? And in the Air Force, it's drilled into your head from the time you start pilot training that you're going to maintain aircraft control, analyze the situation, and then take proper action. And that sounds like really obvious and simple, but you will get in a simulator and they will throw one emergency at you after another. And when you're like really, really new, you will literally sit there and say out loud, you're like, okay, maintain aircraft control. Don't fly into the ground while I'm trying to troubleshoot why this gauge is saying what it's saying. Right? Like, let's not make things worse. Step one.
Yeah. Yeah. Grounding.
It is, right? And it's that opportunity to pause. And we also would say in the F-16, when something bad would happen, to wind the clock. And there's like this manual clock down by your right kneecap. It's like old school. No one uses it anymore. But you used to have to literally wind it. And that phrase comes from like back in the day when they did use that for timing for attacks and all this stuff. But they'll say wind the clock. And what they really mean is take a breath, pause. There are very few things that go wrong that you reacting in a split second is going to make things better.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Right. So it's maintain aircraft control. Do not let things go. To mix metaphors, do not let the train come off the tracks, you know, because you're distracted by the thing that's going wrong. And then analyze the situation. Look at what the facts are. Look at the information you have. And you almost never are going to have all the information.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just have to be okay with that. Like, take the time to do that. But you have to be okay making a decision, taking proper action with what you have. And so, like, when you read those steps at face value, you're like, oh, airplanes, checklists. But it converts so well into day-to-day life and handling any obstacle.
This is so fascinating to me on so many levels, because when you mentioned the simulator, so you literally are put in a simulator. And how many times did you have to go through different simulations before you were able to go up for your first flight?
I can't remember the exact number, but I would say we probably did like somewhere between like, I don't know, 6 or 8 sims before your first flight. But every time you learn a new skill, like a new mission set, you would do it in the simulator first. So it's consistently happening as your skills progress. But I also talk about like visualization.
Yeah.
And we have something called chair flying. Because there's just literally not enough resources, not enough time to be in the sim or in an airplane to get the reps in that you need to get proficient at all the skills you're learning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you would take a cockpit poster, you'd hang it on the wall, you'd sit in your office, and you'd close your eyes and you'd be like, okay, I'm going to call ground and ask for clearance. I'm going to flip this switch. I'm going to do this. And you would walk your brain through the entire process again and again and again, so that when you got in the airplane, you had already been there and done that.
So good.
And I do that for speaking too now. Like, yes. I'll visualize the stage and I'll visualize like making eye contact and connecting with the audience.
Okay. All right, Mice. Okay. There's so many thoughts I have on this right now, because we're going back to the simulation, and then we'll talk about the visualization piece, but like, why I use improv as a teaching tool is because it makes people experience what we're trying to teach them. And so you're literally in the experience, doing the experience, which I think is like obviously a great training ground for anybody in any profession. But when you think about the stakes of what you're simulating, like, things can happen. Things can really go wrong. And this simulation is helping you experience what they want you to feel when they do. So I love that aspect. And I love the visualization piece, which I think a lot of people, especially in leadership, don't necessarily do. If you actually take a time to step back, especially when there's scenarios like at work that aren't going your way with team members, and you visualize what you want to happen, you can actually put it into place. I really think that's like kind of manifesting and visualizing sort of go hand in hand. You're actually saying, here's what I want to happen. Here's what I see happen. But a lot of leaders don't take the time to look at that point of view and to take a step back, take a deep breath, and visualize what they want to see happen. So I think all of these are like pulled leadership tips, which is why you wrote a freaking book about it. Genius and so smart. Hey, hey, my Playdate peeps. I am so sorry to interrupt, but speaking of bad communication, I want us to listen up. Do you want your team to actually listen to each other and respond like humans, not robots? Then it's time to level up with our effective communication workshop here at Improve It. Now, in just 2 hours in person for up to 100 people or 90 minutes online for up to 50 peeps, we'll play our way through powerful improv techniques that teach your team how to read the room, build real rapport, and turn I hear you into I get you. Because what you say and what you don't say shapes every interaction. You can learn more and book your session today at learntoimproveit.com. And let's communicate like champs, shall we? That's learntoimproveit.com. You can find all the information on our effective communication workshop. Reach out, see all the different episodes at our website. Would love to have you join our community over here at learntoimproveit.com. Now back to the show. I want to jump just really quickly to communication under pressure, because I know there's probably some phrases or tools that you might have that when stakes are high, you might use. So do you have like a go-to phrase that you learned or maybe you came up with when stakes are high?
Well, for communication specifically, we have something called C3COM, which is clear, concise, correct.
Clear, concise, correct. Okay, tell me more. Clear, concise, correct.
And so we emphasize that in the context of you're in the middle of an operation, you're airborne, you're trying to get the pieces of information across on the radio. When someone else talks on the radio, you can't talk. Like, you step on each other, right? You're like, your calls will overlap and you'll cut people off. And there's not a lot of airtime. So things have to be communicated very quickly, but they also need to be clear and they need to be right. They need to be correct.
Yeah.
And when you talk about that in terms of like within a business, right? Say you're the leader and you need to communicate something to your team, or even if you're further down in the organization and you're just sending an email for any purpose, I think running it through that litmus test of, is this clear? Is it concise? And is it correct? Like, let's not start the rumor mill.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not do that.
Let's make sure we just are saying what we actually know, not what we're speculating. And like C3COM, it's just so useful in so many different settings. Even in a keynote speech when you have 45 minutes or an hour, no one wants to hear your story that could have been told in 3 minutes in 15 minutes.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So, okay. I also love clear. Brené Brown says clear is kind. And I think about that all the time when I'm communicating with my team, because I always think about just the expectations. If I haven't set an expectation, if I'm not clear and it's something happens that I don't like, if I'm not clear, it's my own fault.
Yep. They can't read your mind. Yep.
Right. And then I think concise, obviously, I think time is so valuable now and people really appreciate just getting right to the point and making sure that the facts are there and is correct. So C3 calm is where we're at. I love that. I wanted to hear that. So I want to get to, you and I were like talking about this before the show. I want to talk about some of the unsexy things, that behind the scenes moments from your fighter pilot days. So give me some blooper reels. Like, what were some of the things that people don't see when they see you as a Thunderbird?
Yeah. So obviously we work really hard to put a very precise and professional show and appearance on when we step out in front of a crowd. But we are just people. Most of us are like in our 30s, some in their late 20s. And you're like a band on tour. Like, you're on the road 240 days a year, staying in hotels with your friends, which is very hard because most of us have families. But you also become super tight knit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you realize that even if you're 35 years old and you're the lead solo for the Thunderbirds, you still have just this like dumb humor that you fall back on sometimes when the days are long and everyone's like slap happy and tired. And you also create so many inside jokes. And one of the big challenges flying an F-16, the cockpit is very small. Like, I had a few inches between my shoulder and the canopy on each side, a couple inches above the top of my helmet and the top of the canopy. And then my legs are down with the rudder pedals. And there's like a piece of the aircraft kind of between your knees. So it's not like you cross your legs. You have a G suit on. You can't pull your leg up. You're kind of just stuck in the position you're in.
How long are you there? How long is usually the show?
Well, the show itself was only like 40 minutes. But we would fly our jets cross country to take them from one show to the next.
I got you.
So that's where you get into problems, because the Thunderbirds are based in Las Vegas. We would do shows in New York, in Florida. We did a show in Colombia. Sometimes you're flying a 5+ hour flight. You will have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is inevitable.
So, okay. Tell me that. So yes. What do you do?
Well, so the guys definitely have it easier for sure. But our flight suits have really long, you know, they zip down the front. The women's ones have extended zippers that go further back. And so you essentially have to like get all the straps out of the way because you're wearing a harness. You have to safe your ejection seat so you don't actually like accidentally hit that handle while you're like messing around trying to make this happen. And for me, I had to get enough clearance, right? So kind of picture it as doing like a wall sit against the back of the seat with like my head tucked over there's not enough vertical clearance. Like, my head is in the way. So I have to like curl my head forward so the back of my helmet's pushed against the canopy.
Oh my God.
And then you have these things called piddle packs. Yeah, I'm sure they actually probably have a different name in like the government system, but everyone calls them piddle packs. It's essentially like a really thick plastic bag with like the gel stuff in it, like in a diaper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh. And you just go in there and then you put it in a Ziploc and you stash it to the side. But you cannot, as a woman, you cannot see what you are doing. Right.
Oh,
so it's like by feel. You're like, okay. Also, you are flying the airplane during this.
I just mentioned that part. Yeah. Yeah. You are, because like you're the only person.
There's one pilot. Right. So
you're flying and you're peeing and you're unstrapping and you're extrapolating into a plastic bag. So, this is a lot of things.
Yes. It is definitely a learning curve. I, you know, did it many times throughout my career, especially like deployments. You're flying 4 to 6 hour flights. But with the Thunderbirds, we flew long flights more than any other squadron I had been part of. So it was an essential skill in that unit. Sometimes you would not have success. Like, I would say I was probably successful like 85% of the time.
Sure, sure.
But occasionally you'd be like, okay, everything's lined up. Let's make this happen. You're like, okay, I feel so much better. You'd finish, you'd pull the piddle pack up where you can see it, and you'd look at how much was in the bag, and you'd be like, that math ain't like that math ain't mathin.
That's not mathin.
You're no. like, where'd the rest my... go?
No, no. So then you just sit in it the rest of the time?
Yeah. It's, you'd be like, you reach back and touch like the back of your flight suit. Cause if it overflows out the back, which is what would happen if you messed it up, it like dumps into the back of your flight suit, like the bottom, your butt essentially. So now you are, again, 30 something years old. You're in this prestigious position. You are flying a $30 million airplane and you're sitting in your pee pants.
Oh yeah. Yeah. With your piddle pack right next to, right you're next like, to you, you know, on the, you're yeah.
Like, damn, wow. This is a glamorous job.
I'm thriving right now is probably what you're saying. I'm thriving. So I'm thriving.
It just became like something that was funny and we would talk about it even on the radio and amongst our flight of, you know, 6 or 8 jets, we'd be like, guys, I had a pill pack mishap that did not go well. And you would laugh about it. And it just is what it is. But the funniest part with the Thunderbirds is that you land at an air show location. There are almost always reporters waiting for you from like local media to do an interview. We call them plane side interviews. The number of times I was on camera at a local TV station talking about the air show. And I'm like, I can't turn around because if I do, you're going to see the back of my flight suit has a darker blue spot on my butt because I'm in my pee pants. It's a regular occurrence.
That is literally, okay, you know the saying, like you're building the plane while you're flying it. Like you're peeing on the plane while you're flying it is your phrase. Like that is wild. And also, people just don't think about it, right? Like these are like the unglamorous things that we see you as like this famed person in this awesome show. And we really needed that story. I needed that today. I needed that play date to come to life. That was good for me. Thank you. I needed my endorphins to flow.
And it's funny to tell because it's funny. So it's always like a funny story to tell. But I also think there's some value in it because it just humanizes us, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
We are just normal people who worked really hard at one specific skill set. And when you kind of take away that mystique, I think it opens up more possibilities for other people.
Okay, can I tell you something? This is like kind of vulgar, but I'm going to go there. I think about this a lot with imposter syndrome. And you think about people who are just doing really cool stuff in the world. And you're like, oh my gosh, she or they are so amazing. Like they're thriving. How do I do this? And then in the back of my mind, I think to myself, but you know what? They poop too.
I knew you were going to say that because I thought the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it humanizes us. Like right behind me in my little podcast studio, I have a vision board and Oprah is literally all over this vision board. I just love Oprah. She's like my North Star. I would love to meet her, yada, yada. Oprah poops too. Okay, Oprah, like we all poop. We all poop. And, you know, fighter pilots poop too. I don't even want to hear a story about the piddle poo pad. Okay.
Oh, I knew you were gonna ask about that. Yeah.
Is there a piddle poo pad?
No, that's the thing. It's just like, don't let that happen.
You just can't.
Hold it.
You just can't.
I mean, I went 13 years without ever having to deal with that, but I have heard plenty of stories of people who just like, this is an emergency. It has to happen. And they get very creative. They sacrifice helmet bags and maps and gloves and all sorts of things. It's emergency at that point. We're like triage.
Yeah. That is, I mean, truly, you don't think about these things. So I'm glad we had you here to help us think through this. I also know that your book is filled with so many great leadership tips, so many things that people in the workforce can take and pull and all of these experiences. We have had a lot of metaphors in our time together here today, but I know there's a lot more in the book and I feel like my peeps got to go get it. So let me ask you this final rapid fire question. Okay. It's not final. I have a few more questions, but this is like a rapid fire that I'm very interested in. Okay. Cockpit or conference room? Which has more egos?
Well, I was alone in my cockpit. So,
no, that's right.
Room.
That's right. Conference room. Okay. Which has more snacks? Cockpit or conference room?
Oh, cockpit. You'd be like, we could have a whole episode on snack tips.
What was your snack of choice? Like, what was your number one snack?
When I was deployed, gummy bears.
Oh,
why you can gummy like bears? Slowly eat them. Slowly. Okay, they feel like a reward, so it made sometimes very long and boring flights,
yeah,
like more manageable.
I see that.
And
I
you can
that.
Like space them out, right? Because you just like eat one and then you like wait a little bit, eat another one.
Oh, you make me want gummy bears right now. My son has like way, way old Halloween candy from like 2024. So maybe I'm going to go find them.
They're probably rock hard at this point.
they're disgusting, but I'm going to get one because that made me hungry. Okay. And then cockpit or conference room, which one preps you better for life?
The cockpit. And that's why I wrote the book, right? Like there's so many things from that really unique experience that I did in like the most stressful environment. So now they work in regular life. They work on a stage in a conference room, whatever. And it helps me keep in perspective that the stakes are usually not as high as we make them out to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm often like, what's the worst that could happen? Because my first career, the worst that could happen was really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it's not. Like,
yeah.
If I trip on my face in front of 2,000 people on a stage, we're going to have some like humor. Comedy fodder for sure.
Exactly. Maybe some blood, maybe a little, what, maybe like a, you know, I actually one time fell, this is a funny story, just very fun fact for you. I fell one time on a girl when I was a dancer. We were doing like a lift or something and I broke her nose. To this day, she still thanks me because I gave her a nose job. She had to get a nose job and she was like so grateful. So anyway, there could be some surgery that happens. There could be things that happen. But at the most, you have a great story to tell from that falling on your face story is my whole point of this whole long thing I just went on. I don't even know where I'm going with this, but I had to tell you I broke someone's nose.
Seek silver linings. That's one of the chapters in the book. Yeah.
Like, there you go. There you go. My friend Stephanie, you're welcome. Okay. Yep. She's happier now. All right. So this is my final question. Mace, you're so fun. Like this has been a true joy. I could talk to you forever. What are you going to do today to make your workday more playful?
I am going to step out in the middle of the afternoon and go for a walk and listen to a true crime podcast, not a personal development podcast, not something like full of tons of intellectual value. I am just going to go get my steps in and listen to something that I was going to say brings me joy, but true crime, that's probably inappropriate to say.
Nope. Some people love it. What's your favorite one? The people need to know, the peeps.
I really like Morbid.
Okay.
They're funny. Morbid. Like the hosts are great. They cover all different sorts of stuff too. Yeah, there's so many. I love true crime. It's weird. I don't normally talk about this in interviews, but I am a crime junkie.
Good. And you know what? That brings you joy. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about bringing more joy to work, bringing more things that bring you happiness. Walks always make me happy too. So I'm so glad we had this connection come in full circle to your word. And I know our peeps are going to want to find you. So tell them where they can find you and get your book, Flipside. Where can they get it?
Everywhere. It is on Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, a lot of indie bookstores. It's mainstream available. As far as following along with my content, I put out a ton of really cool photos and videos, some from the cockpit, some from what I'm doing now, a lot of the lessons in the book. It's Mace, which is my call sign. So MACE _ Curran, my last name. And so that's Instagram, LinkedIn, Michelle Mace Curran. My website's macecurran.com. I tried to be cohesive with my branding across all the things.
Smart. I had to do that at one point too, and it makes it much easier. So we're going to link it all so everybody can find you. And please go get The Flip Side. It's an awesome, awesome book. You are so cool, Mace. Like truly the first and only fighter pilot we've ever had on Workday Playdate. So
thank you. Super dope
chatting with you. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Mace. Okay. What a total powerhouse and a total blast. I want to thank her for bringing her story, her spark, and her serious flip side wisdom to today's play date. Now to my peeps, you know, I like to get you out of here with some homework. Your first piece of homework is choose one fear you've been putting off. It could be big or small, a hard conversation, a project you're nervous about, or even just speaking up first in a meeting. Then I want you to ask yourself, what's a tiny move I can make today to build confidence in this area? How can you flip your fear upside down? Then you're going to write it down. then you're going to do it. And then you're going to come back next week and tell us how it went. You can write it in the review section on Apple iTunes for us, or you can send me an email at info@learntoimproveit.com. I want to make sure you grab Mace's book, The Flip Side, and follow her for all things bold and brilliant. You can find all those things in the show notes, my peeps. But until next time, I want you to flip your fear, find your voice, and don't forget to get out there and play. I'll see you next time.